Coming up on the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast.
You know, a lot of doctors will tell you some of the first times they see some of these high-risk pregnancies is in the delivery room. They've never seen them before. They walk in, they're in labor.
Arkansas Representative Aaron Pilkington discusses presumptive Medicaid eligibility and efforts to remove barriers that can keep moms from initiating prenatal care as soon as possible.
Women's health became a priority in our state, and I don't necessarily know that it wasn't prior, but you can't ignore the statistic.
Dr. Nirvana Manning of the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS explains how the state has come together to address maternal health and shares what's happening now.
We knew we had to do something because we still had such a substantial amount of patients that didn't have any prenatal care.
And Emily McGee of St. Bernard's Healthcare describes their work to expand access to prenatal care in Northeast Arkansas. Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, a series where we explore the data and issues behind maternal and infant health in Arkansas. I'm your host, Sandra McGrew. I'm the executive director at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, or ACHI. We are an independent health policy center focused on evidence-based research, analysis, and collaborative efforts to improve the health of all Arkansans. We pulled our analysts and researchers together to envision what a healthy birthing journey should look like and identify points along the way where our state has opportunities to make lasting improvements for our moms, children, families, and communities. We identified 9 phases along the birthing journey from pre-pregnancy through delivery and into the postpartum period. In this episode, we explore the second phase, the initiation of prenatal care. We begin by speaking with one of the Arkansas lawmakers working to make it easier for moms to begin care earlier in their pregnancies. State Representative Aaron Pilkington is serving his 5th term in the Arkansas House. He represents District 45, which includes portions of Johnson and Pope counties. For the 95th General Assembly, Representative Pilkington serves on the House Public Health, Welfare, and Labor Committee and the House City, County, and Local Affairs Committee. He also serves on the Joint Budget Committee. Representative Pilkington earned his master's in healthcare administration from the University of Arkansas for Medical Science, or UAMS, and he works in administration for Sparks Health. So, Representative, you've really become a leading voice on public health policy in the state, and you were a lead co-sponsor of the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies legislation that passed during the last legislative session. Tell us what motivates your focus on improving maternal health in Arkansas.
Well, I think it's one of these issues where, you know, to me, as a Republican, I've always cared about public health. I think it's an area maybe we don't lead as much in as we probably should. And we're a very red state. And so, you know, we have to give our own solutions. So we can't let one side dominate it, which has been great because this has been a very bipartisan effort in the state of Arkansas, which has been really great to bring all sorts of different voices. So you've got, you know, people who are part of the pro-life movement are in on it, and people who are, you know, part of the pro-choice movement coming together and say, we may disagree on this issue, but we're other issues we can agree on and work together on. And I think it's a good model for the rest of the country to see that despite differences on some major policy differences, you can still come together and work on some of the other outlining issues that are still affecting us. And so for me, as I went to a bipartisan event in Baltimore, actually during my first term, I always love telling the story because Speaker Gilm sent me to a Women and Children's Conference, and I was like, I'm not married and I have no children, so I don't know why you're sending me to this conference. But it was enlightening for me because I'd got a master's in healthcare administration. My father and grandfather both worked in healthcare here in the state. They were hospital administrators. And so I always did care about public health. And to me, it was amazing how much we were dropping the ball in Arkansas, how many things we just weren't doing that we could have done, simple policy changes that to me were not left or right. They just were common sense things that we should do. And so I just started kind of chipping away at it bit by bit. And then, of course, as the maternal health crisis got worse and worse, as we actually started getting better data, too, on what was going on, we really started to see that there were more than cracks. There were fault lines within our healthcare system with what was going on. And so it's kind of one of those deals where, put it this way, I was maybe working in a certain area, and then it just, I kind of like discovered a fault line of problems that need to be addressed, and then I just kind of delve straight into it. Because, you know, originally what I first worked on was, you know, we started to create the first breast milk bank here in Arkansas. And then, of course, over-the-counter birth control was one that we worked on as well. And so just going through that and figuring out, you know, okay, well, who's having the babies, and then seeing that our birth rate was declining in Arkansas. And what's actually really interesting, too, is there's a really big economic case. So you can make the case for public health and being concerned about public health. But a lot of times with a lot of my colleagues, I make the economic case where because we have bad maternal health, because we have falling birth rate, we're actually seeing a lot of areas in Arkansas, especially in the Delta, disappear. And because you've got not only brain drain, but falling birth rates, it's becoming exponential. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, really concerning.
One of the issues that we're exploring here is the role of prenatal care and the importance of beginning that care within the first trimester. We know that in Arkansas, nearly half of the pregnant women receive health coverage through Medicaid. But the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has noted that in general, applications for Medicaid can take anywhere from less than a day to more than 45 days to process. One change included in the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Act was the establishment of presumptive eligibility. Can you tell us what that is? Tell our listeners what that is and why was that important to include?
Sure. So the most layman's terms is to think about it, especially if you're a pregnant woman who doesn't necessarily understand this, is if you are pregnant, you can go into the doctor and they will presume you have Medicaid because you're pregnant and because you meet this threshold. And so we are putting patients first and not putting paperwork first, which I think sometimes as policymakers, we get so into the policy, we forget about who's the end game, which is taking care of the patient. And so if you are someone who is pregnant, go to your doctor. Don't wait. Don't wait that 45 days. Don't wait until you submit your Medicaid application and you did something wrong and they send it back and you got to fix it. And this whole time you're not seeing prenatal care. And the reason why this was so important is because we did see, you know, just in the conversation between me and the governor's office and DHS was, you know, what were some of these fundamental issues that were wrong with our maternal health crisis? And that was a big deal, is women not getting that prenatal care they need. Well, why are they not going? And they, you know, would tell us, well, I don't have health care insurance. And they said, well, you will because you're pregnant. And they said, well, but the eligibility problem became an issue of just getting through the process. So while we're always wanting to improve that process, it's also just doing presumptive eligibility, because if you are pregnant, you will qualify. So it's kind of one of those deals. We know all the criteria is already there. So why are we not treating you now? And of course, once again, going back to the economics of it, it's better to treat a woman earlier and help make sure that she has good prenatal health, because then we're hopefully saving money on the back end by not having high-risk pregnancies. Or if we do, we're treating those situations beforehand. You know, a lot of doctors will tell you some of the first times they see some of these high-risk pregnancies is in the delivery room. They've never seen them before. They walk in, they're in labor. But it's because in their mind, they didn't have health insurance. They didn't have anything to do. They're just going to do it themselves. Their grandma did it that way. They're going to be fine. In reality, things have changed, and they need to come in, need to be seen. And so now they're in the ER, and we've got a high-risk pregnancy we're trying to solve and not have a bad outcome in. So it's to me, it's so vitally important to improving maternal health in Arkansas. And that's why, you know, I'm so glad we have it and very happy to know that, you know, there was so much support behind it.
And ultimately wanting that to lead to healthier outcomes.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the reality is, if you can get someone in early on, hey, you have gestational diabetes, let's get you your insulin you need, let's get you treated, let's monitor that, you know, you're preeclamptic, let's make sure that we address those issues. All those things, if we get them early on, we can actually have a way better outcome, and we can plan ahead and make sure things are where they need to be. Because, I mean, and that's a little bit just in healthcare in general, when it gets so expensive, is when you're dealing with the unknown and when you're dealing with things on the back end, when things have gotten so worse that you are now not dealing with root cause, you're just triaging symptoms, trying to fix the issue. And so if you've got a high-risk pregnancy, you've just come to the ER, you're delivering in the middle of the night, I mean, as a doctor, that is a terrible situation, but it's also a costly situation. And granted, we are all paying for that, especially mm-hmm. if they're on Medicaid. And so we all want everyone to be healthy and happy, but we also want to make sure we're not bankrupting the state by just having these births. So it's kind of one of those classic is we're being, you know, we don't want to be penny-wise, pound-foolish. And that's, to me, we're doing the opposite. We're being wise by making an early investment in healthcare with prenatal health so that we can save money on the back end. Because like I said, some of these babies, I mean, especially if they're bad outcomes, outcomes because they didn't get the prenatal help that they need. I mean, they can be millions and millions of dollars. And we care about life in this state. And so we're going to do everything we can to save those babies and to make sure that they have good outcomes and save those moms, and which is admirable of us as a society that we've chosen that that's important to us. It's very costly, but we're still going to do it. So anything we can do on the front end to save those costs is the better.
I want to talk a little bit about the unbundling of the global payments, which was a really big part of the legislation, the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies legislation. And for us, even here at ACAI, you know, having the unbundled payments, you know, that gives us better line of sight on provider efficiency, on costs. Tell us more about why you felt like that also needed to be included.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. It first got brought up. I was kind of unsure about it just because, you know, this idea of global payments and everything being included, you know, that's the best way to do it. But the reality was, and this is kind of the lamest terms I can kind of put in, is to your point, we're not seeing all the things that what are getting done, we're not getting done from a data standpoint. And so it's us as policymakers, we need to know what that data is so that we can make good policy changes. But the other part too is just getting more people in the game. I mean, you are having a lot of people, especially in rural areas, you know, they're getting treated by their family practice doc. Maybe they have an OB who's, you know, in Conway, but they live all the way in Dover, Arkansas, or whatever. You know, maybe they're not seeing them as much. And so getting more members of the healthcare team kind of involved in where they can bill and get part of those payments, you know, that now kind of incentivizes them, A, to learn about that and to be a part of the process. Because otherwise, it's like, well, you're kind of within that global window payment. You know, you really need to go see them. And it's like, well, I can't make it all the way down there. Or, you know, and I've got transportation issues, which we hear all the time in rural health. But you can see me and I can still get paid and you can be part of that. That payment can go to you. It just gets them more involved. So we really need to get clever with the way that we're practicing care, and using existing structures within rural health is, I think, the best way to do it.
And also just the transparency of...
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's huge. I mean, that sort of transparency and being able to look into what's going on is so helpful. And I mentioned it earlier, but I'll say it again. It's like, we need good data to make our decisions. Maybe it's not the sexiest thing in the world, but data is so key in trying to create good healthcare policy. And it's actually funny. I love this line I steal from Senator Cotton, but he says, what gets measured gets changed. To me, that's so important for us, because as we're trying to help fix this problem and new data comes out, it just really helps us kind of fine tune what is working, what's not working. And so for me, that's a lot of it, too. When we first started in this kind of journey about trying to improve maternal health in Arkansas, was a lot of times we felt like we were flying blind, because we you know, you get these outcome data, but you wouldn't say, okay, well, how did we get here? And you'd have anecdotal evidence of that. It's like, but what is on the ground? Because what people are saying and what's actually happening, I'm sure you've known from experience, are two separate things.
You know, you're a dad now, as you've said, so a dad of four. Looking ahead years from now, how do you want the narrative around maternal health in Arkansas to change?
I think, to me, I always tell people, I want to take Arkansas from the worst place to have a baby to the best place to have a baby. And that's a really long journey for us. And I don't know if that's 5 years, 10 years, 25 years. I think I would like the narrative to change. Is Arkansas as a state decided we cared about our babies and our families, and so we invested in what could we do to make that easier? How do we make it to where people think, I want to go to Arkansas to raise my family and to have a family, because it's such a good place and it's so welcoming to young mothers and it's so welcoming to young families. But this way, like, people think about Florida, like, that's a great place to go retire. I want Arkansas to be in the way where it's a great place to have a family and to raise a family. That is part of who Arkansans are. We are a family-friendly state, and we're going to have policies that are family-friendly, whether you are, you know, a first time having a kid, or this is your third kid, or even your kids are older. You know, I just want to have that focus on, you know, we're a good place to live and raise a family.
Thank you so much for being here, Representative Pilkington. We really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we'll speak with one of the clinical leaders guiding both policy and practice when it comes to improving outcomes for Arkansas moms. Dr. Nirvana Manning is an OBGYN and leading the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. Dr. Manning, thank you so much for joining us. You have been on the front lines of maternal health in Arkansas, both as an OB-GYN and clinical leader, as well as a policy and public health leader. You've helped guide efforts to improve health outcomes for women and infants in Arkansas. Talk to us, how has the attention to and action on these issues evolved over the last few years?
Well, I think it's been so exciting. So when I first got into this space, again, I'm an OBGYN. I love the clinical medicine of it. And then I had the opportunity to take on this role as chairman as almost the perfect time. We received congressional support to start the Arkansas Maternal Mortality Review Committee in 2019. And I think that's what brought to light when we were able to start looking at each of these maternal deaths on a singular basis and start to breaking them down. And I think once we were able to quantify what that looked like for our state, it really got the attention of everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think it's telling all the way from our upper leadership down to grassroots efforts that women's health became a priority in our state. And I don't necessarily know that it wasn't prior, but you can't ignore the statistics. Mm-hmm. And you can't ignore that what we're doing wasn't working in the same way. And so I think getting these groups of people together, all swimming in the same direction, each with their own spin on it, each with their own areas of expertise, but meeting regularly, it just made such a difference. And I feel like it was so telling. We recently went to a Heartland Forward Maternal Health Summit, and it was in December of this last year, and everyone seemed like a friend. And it was the first time that I looked across a room of people that were probably strangers 5 years ago to me, that each in their own element have done so much work, and yet we all have swam together and worked in this space and realized that there's no one person that's going to make a difference, that it's going to take collective efforts from all of these grassroots, from legislation, from clinicians, from just the support systems around these women to really change what the statistics look like in our state.
What are some of the persistent challenges that we have faced and continue to face in Arkansas? We are such a rural state.
Mm-hmm. So that, and again, we're not unique in that we're rural, but it is much more pronounced in our state than others. As an example, when before COVID started, we had 39 delivering hospitals in our state, and current state, we have 32. And while that doesn't seem like a huge number difference, it's a huge geographic problem. These hospitals are not closing in central Arkansas, in Conway, in northwest Arkansas. They're closing in our rural outskirts of our state. And so these women have an increased burden to get to care. And they started off with an increased burden. There was less access in those areas even prior to pregnancy. So they weren't optimized with regards to chronic hypertension, diabetes, obesity, all the things that we know make a huge difference, as well as mental health or substance abuse. Those services are not even relevant. I mean, they don't have those services in a lot of areas of our state. So there's that, the sheer geographical problem. Then there's lack of providers. You know, we used to have a program at our medical school where we would match OB-GYNs into rural communities in our state. It sounds great. The problem is, though there is an obstetrical problem that we can address, these smaller communities don't have the support for the gynecology. So we can't put these brand new graduates into these programs that will lose half of what they do every day. So then what are we left with? We are left with either people that want to retire there. We are left with, you know, either lack of access. And so I think we've really worked to try to expand who can do this within these bumpers in this area safely, and then use our OB-GYNs as specialists for when we need to phone a friend. And I think that's where I'm real excited about the certified nurse midwife school that UAMS is starting. I'm excited about family medicine OB fellowships, where we can train our family medicine practitioners to do this within these bumpers, do it safely, but know when it's outside of the realm of what they should be taking care of or what they're comfortable with, and they can phone a friend. They can get that higher level of expertise if they need it. But a lot of it is within their wheelhouse. And so how do we now expand providers in light of the fact that so many are also retiring? And so it's all kind of compounded with regards to that. And then health literacy in our state is not great. It becomes not just one issue, but it's almost death by a thousand cuts, where there's so many areas, which again are opportunities. We have so many different opportunities that we can address that I think will incrementally make such a big difference in these women and families' lives.
And you've just touched on the number of birthing hospitals that have closed around the state and how that has changed the dynamic for pregnant women in those parts of the state. I want to pivot a little bit because you've touched on some of this, but under your leadership at the UAMS Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health, y'all have launched a string of initiatives to support mothers and infants, and one of them is Heart Moms, which is focused in rural South Arkansas. Can you talk to our listeners about what that is and why this was an initiative that you and the center wanted to get behind?
Sure. So this is a HRSA grant. We kind of named it Heart Moms. It's an RMOMS, a Rural Obstetrical Maternity Services grant. And the idea behind it, and one of the prerequisites for it, was rural area, encompassing areas that had recently lost labor and delivery coverage, as well as limited access to labor and delivery coverage. We chose South Arkansas because it truly encompassed everything that we wanted. There is a hospital in El Dorado. There was a hospital in Camden. We have lost several hospitals in those areas as well. And so how can we create a sustainable model where families can still get prenatal care with high-risk conditions closer to home by a potentially a advanced practice partner, by family medicine partners, closer in a health department on a mobile unit? How can we create this hub-and-spoke model where the hub still has clear line of sight over all the spokes and everything is talking to each other? And some of the challenges that I think we are going to need to work through is the data. Like, everybody that touches this patient should not, it should not be like it's the first time. And so how can that data seamlessly go from the health department APRN that saw them at their new OB visit to the family medicine provider that may have seen them on a mobile unit closer to home, to where they got their ultrasound that may be in a different location? And how does that patient know seamlessly where their care will be? And therefore, the disposition at the hospital is optimized with regards to their care and them having felt as though they are supported throughout this entire process. We know that it's impossible for these women to make it to Little Rock as frequently as they would need to be seen. I mean, not just the cost of transportation, but childcare and jobs and everything else that goes along with it. So how can we safely bring care closer to home, but make sure that it doesn't feel disjointed, make sure that we have good line of sight over the quality outcomes that we want, and then give that birthing hospital all of the resources they need to now take care of this influx of patients that are coming in. My hope is that if we can create it here, we can recreate this in other pockets of our state with different nuances, but then we have a cohesive network that's all talking to each other. And so that part of it's super exciting to me.
Talk to us a little bit about what are the resources and tools that exist now that have been utilized so far in some of these rural areas to give pregnant women better access, more access.
Sure. So, you know, telemedicine has not been new to us. I know for a lot of people, COVID kind of brought it to the limelight, but we have been pioneers in telemedicine for years at UAMS. And so it's really been building on the infrastructure that we've already had in place. Now, it's very helpful now that we have continuous glucose monitoring. We have fetal heart rate tracings that can be done in a patient's home. We have access to ultrasounds that can be mobile. We have blood pressure cuffs and weights that can then be directly uploaded into this patient's medical records so that real-time practitioners can see nuances that may be happening in the home. And luckily, due to Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies, those are all now billable resources. So practitioners can start to practice differently while still maintaining safety and hopefully decrease the number of false positives where patients are going to a hospital that may not necessarily need to, and vice versa. Patients that are staying at home that may think something is abnormal can now get immediate feedback from a provider that says, I feel uncomfortable with you staying in the house and I need you to go and get a higher level of care than what we have. So I do think capitalizing on these and then really making sure our practitioners around the state feel comfortable with what those are. And I think part of it is this billing coding kind of mess. It's hard to navigate. What can you do? What can't you do? Who bills for it? And so I hope that with the UAMS Arkansas Center for Women's and Infants Health, we can also help navigate. We are touching all of our delivering hospitals in our state. And so we can help with some of the low-hanging fruit on making sure that they are financially getting what they need in order to take care of these patients.
How do the community health workers fit into this?
So they are our lifelines in these communities. And it's funny, that was a word that I didn't even really know about probably 10 years ago. And now it's something we rely on almost daily. Through our proactive postpartum call center, really the whole premise of this is some of these warm handoffs to these community healthcare workers. But essentially, it's people in their communities that will wrap around these patients and families. Again, when you go see a doctor, quite often it's a one touch, right? And they're not going to pick up on some small nuances. They're not going to pick up that your mood has slowly, you know, decreased over the last several weeks and months. But these community healthcare workers are embedded in their communities. And I put some of that with doulas in this postpartum care, where we hope that they will identify some of these subtle things that are happening to our moms in the postpartum period and elevate those concerns such that they don't go without. But those community healthcare workers are helping us with the reapplication process for insurance. They're helping us make sure that they keep some of the appointments that they have, that they are utilizing the resources that we have in our state. We have some really great resources. And so I hope that with some of this stuff in the center, we get data on, okay, what do we have? But more importantly, what do we not have? Like, what do we need to go into the next legislative session with real data and asks that, you know, in these three parts of the state, we don't have X, Y, and Z, and that's where we need to concentrate some of our efforts.
When it comes to public health, you know, it can be a challenge to really move the needle. It takes time, it takes resources, and a lot of willpower. With that in mind, what are some goals you think that we could achieve realistically in our state in the next 3 to 5 years?
I would love. So in the last legislative session, Representative Lee Johnson passed a bill for, and I think he loves good acronyms, but he calls it MOMS, and it's a maternal kind of hub. And I would love to see us incorporate that hub. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Right now, if my colleague in Clarksville, Arkansas, needs to transport a patient because their hospital does not have a blood bank that's appropriate for whatever problem this person has, she has to call me, and I may or may not be open. She then calls Baptist. They may or may not be open. She has gone through 8 different hospitals in different areas before she has found someone that can take care of her patient. We need that to be seamless. We need our providers to know that the next best level of care is a phone call away. We have probably 5 or 6 really good hospitals that could take care of a lot of things. We need that to be seamless in our state. We need patients to know how to they elevate the care when they feel as though they're not being heard by whomever they're seeing or wherever they are. Where does that concern go next? And that truly could all be centralized. And so I would love to see something comprehensive with regards to that. You know, we're working on the outreach in the immediate postpartum period. I would love to see that get extended for, you know, several months or even up to that year. We know that, you know, though 1/3 of maternal mortality is in that immediate hospital stay, another 1/3 is in that first 6 weeks, a whole 1/3 of it is 3 months and above within that year. And that really is a lot of our mental health and substance abuse. And so how can we get to that in a better way? And I think it's more frequent checking, it's engaging our community healthcare workers, and it's making sure that we have resources in our state all over to be able to help those patients.
In addition to the work that you are doing, what else could we be doing as a state to improve outcomes for our moms and children's, just even from a broad stroke point of view?
I'm a big fan of educating our youth. And I think the earlier you learn some things, the better the decisions you can make. And it's very different. People come from different backgrounds. People come from different families. And so how can we educate them all to know about, for girls, how to know about their bodies, how to know how to protect yourself, how to not get pregnant if you don't want to be, such that you don't even get to that new OB appointment unless you want to. Yes, it's a sex education, but I would even take it further. It's puberty education, making sure that girls understand what's going on in their bodies and what that means on a very simplistic way. And that way, they're engaged enough to ask questions along the way. I think we have a lot of momentum. I also don't want to see us make a small improvement in some of our statistics and lose that momentum. And so how can we start creating some sustainability programs to continue the work that's being done for years to come?
And you're also a mother. Tell me, what keeps you going on this, on doing this work?
You know, Gosh, I just love it. I never thought I would. I really didn't even know this work was out there. I went into medicine because I love clinical medicine. I love the field. But now, you know, someone once told me, like, in a clinic, I can help the patient in front of me. But in some of this work, I can help hundreds of patients and families. And that has filled my cup in a way that I never really anticipated. Women's health is so bipartisan. It doesn't matter. We all have moms. We have wives and husbands at home that care. We have children we're wanting to raise in the safest way. And I think we're all very united in the front that women's health care is everyone's health care. And so if we can all kind of agree that we want this to be a better place and a better state for our moms, it just gives us that kind of North Star.
In just a moment, we'll speak with one of the leaders finding new ways to reach pregnant women in rural Northeast Arkansas so they can begin their prenatal care as soon as possible. Arkansas is a rural state. While that's not unique to Arkansas, it does pose some unique challenges when it comes to providing important prenatal care to Arkansas women.
Prenatal care can include screening for medical conditions or other risk factors that can lead to poor outcomes for both the mother and their child. This care is also most effective when it begins early in a pregnancy and is continued consistently through delivery. According to the CDC, 16% of Arkansas moms do not initiate prenatal care within their first trimester. The March of Dimes also found that about 20% of Arkansas mothers receive inadequate prenatal care based on the timing and number of visits. Those are very real numbers with serious consequences, particularly in situations that already involve high-risk pregnancies. We know that there are very real challenges or roadblocks that can prevent new moms from accessing that care. In some cases, it can be difficult for mothers to quite literally get to their doctor's office. 9 Arkansas hospitals have had to close their labor and delivery units since 2019. In some cases, that means the OBGYN staffing those units have had to relocate. An ACHI analysis of claims data in Arkansas State Medical Board licensure files identified 10 counties, 10, with no active OBGYNs. There are, however, efforts underway to reach new moms to begin that care and continue it through delivery and into the postpartum period. In Arkansas, Medicaid finances 47% of births. Several years ago, the state created the Life 360 Homes Program. The maternal Life 360 program is designed to provide intensive support for pregnant women enrolled in traditional Arkansas Medicaid or Medicaid expansion known as Arkansas Health and Opportunity for Me, or ARHOME. Under the program, multiple hospitals around the state began collaborating with the Arkansas Department of Human Services and the group Parents as Teachers to support new mothers in new ways. One of those hospitals was St. Bernard's, based in Jonesboro. To learn more about their work, we're joined by Emily McGee, Vice President of Nursing and Women and Children's Services at St. Bernard's. McGee earned her Bachelor of Science in Nursing from Arkansas State University and holds a Master of Business Administration from Harding University. Ms. McGee, thank you so much for joining us. I want to learn more about the work that you're doing today to improve maternal health in Northeast Arkansas. But first, could you tell me more about how St. Bernard's began to recognize the scale of the maternal health challenges we face and where we started to take action?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me today. I'm very excited to be here as well. So, with St. Bernard's, we were founded by the Levitan Benedictine Sisters 125 years ago. And through their work and their mission to provide Christ-like healing to the community through education, treatment, and health services, they are very passionate about maternal care. And so we find it very fulfilling as an organization to help drive maternal and infant health in Northeast Arkansas. And so in probably 2015, we were seeing our maternal mortality and infant mortality increase, and we noted that almost 13% of our patients did not have any type of prenatal care. And so it was Brenda Million's dream and our sister's dreams that they open a pregnancy clinic. And so that pregnancy clinic has brought us down to less than 0.5% of our patients don't have any type of prenatal care.
That's amazing.
So it was mid-2010s, 2015, when we decided we had to make a change.
And where are the women's clinics now? I mean, Jonesboro, Osceola, Paragould.
Lawrence Memorial in Walnut Ridge, and then at Crossridge in Wynn.
Looking first at prenatal care, what does your support through your clinics and the Life 360 home programs, what does that look like? Can you give our listeners a little glimpse into what all of that is?
Oh, absolutely. So we start with any patient can come to one of our clinics, whether they have insurance coverage or not. And so you will first make an appointment with our pregnancy clinics in Jonesboro, and they'll set you up with our OBGYN, Dr. Rich, for your initial appointment. And then we have 3 different nurse practitioners that primarily go to see patients here in Jonesboro. for follow-up visits, and then in our satellite clinics as well. So you'll see one of those. We have the most amazing ultrasound techs here with at the clinics that provide care for you. We have a partnership with UAMS Angels Program for our high-risk moms and babies. So we have telemedicine with their MFMs and availability for that. So you don't have to drive to Little Rock. You can stay here because we often see transportation as a challenge. In addition, throughout your prenatal care, we have different educational opportunities. So we have Baby State Quarterly, and that is a free to the community. And it has the different departments that you'll interact with in the hospital. But we don't want to just limit it to pregnant moms through St. Bernard's. And so we have different groups throughout the community, whether it be pediatric groups, our lactation services, our JPD does car seat safety. We have photographers, pelvic floor therapy, just all different types of services that you can learn about during your prenatal period. In addition to that, we offer laboring classes. We have lactation to help you prepare for breastfeeding once baby is born. I'm sure I'm forgetting a service, but those are the main services that come to mind. I will say it's really our partnership with Maternal Life 360 has been a game changer, because we also, I failed to mention our wonderful social worker at the pregnancy clinic. She assesses social determinants of health. And so she goes by what mom says, but through our partnership with Maternal Life 360 and parents as teachers, they're able to go into the home and truly see, does baby have a safe place to sleep? Do we have a way for safe transportation?
And also addressing the social needs such as food insecurity, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, as you certainly know, the birthing journey, that it doesn't stop with the birth of a child. That's one of the reasons I was excited to have you join us, because talk to us about how does your program at St. Bernard's, how does it shift gears after delivery and as a mom transitions into that postpartum period?
Do you know, that is one of the strengths that makes me most excited about our partnership with Maternal Life 360 and then working with parents as teachers. Because as a new mom, if you don't have transportation to go somewhere and you have to choose for one appointment, you're going to go take care of baby before you take care of mom. And so now with parents as teachers going into the home, they're able to help coordinate that for mom to come in for her postpartum visit and make sure she's doing well. But also parents as teachers are able to follow the baby and mom for up to 2 years after delivery. And so they're well versed in signs of postpartum depression and looking at developmental milestones for baby to ensure that we are meeting those milestones appropriately. And if not, what do we need to bring in to help? And so that was definitely something that we were missing as a pregnancy clinic and women's and clinic or children's services. And so it has truly been a blessing to have parents as teachers going into the homes and coordinating all of that.
How have you been growing the program? You launched it in Jonesboro, but you've expanded to Greene and Lawrence counties in recent months. What are some future plans?
So we did in November of 24, we started here in Craighead County. We quickly saw, because St. Bernard's, we reach out over 23 counties is our service area. And obviously having the pregnancy clinics in four different counties, it's inevitable that we need different assistance in those counties. So we partner with parents as teachers. We just did open our pregnancy clinic in Paragould, and based on the amount of patients that we have there, we saw it would be very beneficial to expand in close proximity to Craighead County, but also for the patients and their families. And then Lawrence Memorial, we definitely saw a need in that area as well. And again, geographically, it's very much easier for parents as teachers to reach both of those places. So those are the most logical places to start. I definitely hope to expand to other nearby counties in the future, but we definitely want to get started up and going with these two expansions and then continue to drive out further throughout Northeast Arkansas.
And what has the response been like so far, both from patients and the broader communities that you're serving?
Through the communities and just resources in the communities, they have been very excited that we're offering this program. It has been definitely a learning experience for our clinic because we weren't aware of everything that was available for our moms. And so parents as teachers have really helped us identify those resources for our patients and their families.
Preparing for this conversation, we came across a quote from you in a news story that we felt really gets to the heart of why so much energy is being focused on this issue right now. You said, quote, "We cannot have healthy communities without healthy moms and babies." Talk to us about what inspires you to keep up with this work, because it's not always easy.
You know, never in a million years would I imagine I would be working with women's services. I was an ICU nurse by trade, an adult ICU nurse. And about 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to start working with women's and children's. And when I did, I have always been in the hospital. And so, you know, I hear, well, we don't have a car, or, you know, just different barriers that people face, and had no idea how truly blessed I am to be able to have a job and drive to work every day and go home to my family in a nice warm house. And working with the clinic has been a huge eye opener and has really driven my passion, realizing that it's not, the labor and delivery floor is not all rainbows and butterflies. You know, it is true devastation to so many families. And what can we do to prevent that? What can we do to make that the happy floor? And then just watching, you know, children young in age and seeing what they could possibly go home to, just making, having something that can fix that for them and help mold their future just to make a better future for our communities.
Is there a story or an experience that you've had in this role that sticks out to you?
Oh, there's several, but I'll give a few success stories with Maternal Life 360. So we had a mom of multiple children that was about to she was being evicted from her home, and we at the clinic would have never known that, but through our work with parents as teachers, they were able to identify it. We worked together to get them permanent housing and gainful employment. You know, we changed the life of not just mom and baby, but many siblings in that as well. And that's not something we would have been able to do. We've also found a mom living in her car and not working. And so we were able to find her housing as well and a job.
You know, obviously the accessibility is really a challenge in Arkansas because of the rurality of our state. And then in addition to that, when you have transportation issues too. But by expanding your footprint in these smaller rural communities, you're allowing for more access to more care. And that's really, really key.
Absolutely. And I think when we expanded our satellite clinics, we knew we had to do something because we still had such a substantial amount of patients that didn't have any prenatal care. But once we started that expansion, we definitely started seeing that number drop. And, you know, we've looked at maybe the provider that normally goes to one of those clinics they're not able to go that day. And so there's been a couple times that we'll just say, hey, can you come to Jonesboro? Well, it's not a possibility because they walk to the clinic, or in the areas that they're in, you have to take off half a day to come to the doctor in Jonesboro because it's not just a run over. And so those clinics just offer so many more women the feasibility to see the doctor prenatally. We would have patients that would come, their only form of transportation is Medicaid van. And so Medicaid brings them, but you know, they don't stay and wait on you. So those patients were in our clinic all day until they could come back and get them And that's where we saw an issue postpartum, is because Medicaid ban won't bring baby or siblings. So those satellite clinics have just been key to ensuring that our patients get the care that they need.
Thank you so much for all of the work that you're doing, and thank you for joining us today on our podcast.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast. In our next episode, we'll move on to the third phase along the birthing journey and see how new efforts to provide education and support to Arkansas mothers can help improve maternal health outcomes in our state.
We continue the efforts. We build the momentum. We can't let up. Arkansas moms are depending on us.
Casey Cochran with the Arkansas Department of Health will join us to share how local health units and other services around the state work to fill any gaps in care and make sure every new mom in Arkansas has the support she needs.
It's that moment when you meet with a mom and she didn't think she can do it, and then she does it. Whatever it is, whether it's a medicated, unmedicated, cesarean delivery, whatever it is, she sees that she can do it. She's empowered and she's surprised and amazed at herself.
We'll dive into the evolving role of doulas in our state with Nicole Fletcher of the Doula Alliance of Arkansas and Nurturing Arrows Birth Services.
There's not a lot of conversation about this stuff, all this stuff, but this is where we demonstrate the best way to put babies to sleep. This is our safe sleep baby. You know, babies should be put to sleep without anything in the crib. We take all this stuff out when we do our demonstration.
And then we'll visit the Arkansas Birthing Project to learn how Dr. Zenobia Harris and her growing network of sister friend mentors around the state are stepping in to provide the social support new mothers need to improve the chances of a healthy birthing journey for themselves and their babies. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation. The Healthy Birthing Journey is produced by Joshua Cook at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. You can find more episodes, our infographic outlining the 9 points on a healthy birthing journey, and more analyses of maternal and infant health data in Arkansas on our website, achi.net. Thank you for listening.